Proverbs 1:1-7. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction.
That's my daughter. I'm kind of proud of her. Yep. Am I safe here? Am I in the safe zone? I'm hearing the little hum over here. Just a quick tech check. Are we good? Yeah? Okay. I got a little ringiness, at least in my ears. I don't know if it's out there. But hey, let me just say to all of you who are here today, thank you for braving the coldest day of this fall yet to come and worship the Lord. And you who are here, I just want to say to you, welcome, and I'm so glad that you braved this dangerously cold weather that scared some of our brothers and sisters away. Not that they're weak or wimpy or not one of us or anything like that, but I would add that people here in our area pay hundreds of dollars to sit outside three times as long to watch football games on a regular basis. And to those of you who are worshiping at home, I'm so glad you're with us. No, seriously, to those of you who are worshiping at home, let me just say a special word of welcome to you. And whether you're at home because you don't like the weather or because of other reasons, we're glad to have you looped in here today as well. So welcome to you guys. Welcome to those of you who are here. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to suggest to you that the Church of Jesus Christ is in desperate need of wisdom. The last couple of weeks, Professor Vincent Bacot was here and he preached to us about these priorities of loving God and loving our neighbor as ourselves. He preached to us about these priorities and about how to live out these priorities in this particular cultural moment that we're in right now. And he painted last week as he was talking about loving our neighbors without asterisks. So loving our neighbors without putting an asterisk next to some people and saying, I'll love most of my neighbors, but not that neighbor. And he painted this picture of what our neighborhoods look like, right? And so one house has the rainbow flag and another house has the Trump-Pence sign out front and another house has the Biden-Harris sign out front and another house has the Blue Lives Matter flag waving on the porch, and the next house over has the Black Lives Matter poster in the front yard. And we live in this neighborhood where people have deeply held views that are often not just differences of opinion or not just seeing things differently, but deeply held views that are inviting our neighbors not just to believe certain things about themselves or about our nation, but to believe certain things about people who are different than them, right? And so we live in this cultural moment where people not only have different opinions, but they have very strongly held convictions about how evil the others are, right? And as Dr. Bacot pointed out, sometimes people even confirm our suspicions or fears about them, making it even more challenging to love our neighbors. And here's the thing. We do want to love our neighbors as ourselves and do that without asterisks, but as the author Zach Eswine points out, quote, love requires wisdom. You tracking with me? You feel that sometimes? Yeah, I want to love that person, but how do you do that? Love requires wisdom. Another author, Ray Orland Jr., has put it like this. If we have love but not wisdom, we will harm other people despite our best intentions. If we have courage but not wisdom, we will blunder boldly. If we have truth but not wisdom, we will make the gospel ugly to other people. If we have technology but not wisdom, we will use the best communications ever invented to broadcast stupidity. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to suggest to you that the Church of Jesus Christ is in deep and desperate need of wisdom from above. In fact, let me personalize that a little bit. I know that today I need wisdom. I need more wisdom in my neighborhood, and I need more wisdom in my relationships, and I need more wisdom in my family, and I need more wisdom in my use of money, and I need more wisdom in my use of words. I know that I need more wisdom. How about you? Today we're launching into a new series of sermons in the book of Proverbs, which is a book in the Bible, a book in the middle of the Hebrew Scriptures, a book in the middle of the Old Testament that promises to teach us wisdom, God's wisdom for life in the real world that we live in, wisdom for living well in God's world. Just a tiny bit of orientation about this book that we're turning to here today. The book of Proverbs has a lot of these little kind of two-line proverbs, these two-line little pithy sayings that offer perspective and advice and guidance for us, right? These are the things that we think about when we think about the book of Proverbs, right? And so the book of Proverbs teaches us things like a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You've probably observed this to be true in one situation or another, right? Or the book of Proverbs has things like this: a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. Most of us have known some fools like that, maybe next door, maybe in our own households. You know what? Let me be honest. I've been that fool before. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. These little pithy sayings, these concise two-line perspectives on life and advice about life, are what we normally think about when we think about the book of Proverbs. And starting in about 4 or 5 weeks, we'll take some time to consider the teaching of many of these kind of two-line perspectives or these two-line pieces of wisdom. We'll get to those in about a month or so. But first, we find those two-line Proverbs from Proverbs chapter 10 all the way through the end of the book in Proverbs chapter 30 or even into 31. But in chapters 1 through 9, what we might call kind of the first half of the book of Proverbs, the introduction to the book of Proverbs, we get kind of these little miniature speeches, these miniature kind of poetic speeches that invite us to pursue the path of wisdom, that invite us to choose wisdom which leads to life instead of choosing foolishness which leads to death and destruction. So these first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs, these kind of little mini sermons, invite us into that. And today we're going to pay attention to the introduction to the introduction. Just these first 7 verses, and we're going to listen to how the book of Proverbs introduces itself to us. And as we listen to how the book of Proverbs introduces itself to us, I want to show you 4 things that we can learn here about wisdom. I think we'll spend more time on number 1 and number 4. We'll do 2 and 3 probably quickly, but 4 things that we can learn about wisdom from these first 7 verses of the book of Proverbs. The first thing that we learn about wisdom here is that wisdom is for us. It's for people like you and me. Whoever you are, this book offers you an opportunity to take a step forward with the Lord. Look with me, if you would, at how the book of Proverbs introduces itself. Verse 2, it's here to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing and righteousness, justice, and equity. And then look at verse 4, to give prudence to the simple. Now, probably when you arrived, most of us wouldn't prefer to call ourselves simpletons, right? When we arrived today, probably with, you know, if we got a whole bunch of options of what category we'd like to be in, we'd rather not be in the simpleton category. But I got bad news for you. This is where all of us start. This is where all of us start in life. I got bad news for you. We're not born fully stocked with wisdom. We're born in need of gaining wisdom. And some of us stay stuck there in that simple phase, desperately needing to gain any wisdom at all, at least through our teenage years, right? Many of us stay in that phase of our lives, way beyond that even, right? We all begin in this simple place, but the book of Proverbs says, look, even if you're a simple person, which in the book of Proverbs lingo, and we'll see this over and over, we'll see this as we move through the book, the idea of being a simpleton according to the book of Proverbs is the idea of being a person who hasn't yet decided which direction you're intending to head with your life. It's the person who just kind of says whatever to whatever is going on. Oh, these people are into church stuff? Well, whatever, that's cool. I'll do spirituality. Oh, well, you people are into partying? Whatever, that's cool. I'll join you in partying. The simple person, as we'll see in the book of Proverbs, is a person who's kind of undecided about what trajectory or what path he or she is on. And listen to me, even if that's you, and in all honesty, you haven't decided where you stand with the Lord, you haven't decided where you stand in relation to trying to live a life of wisdom or just going along with the crowds for the rest of your life, this book offers you an opportunity to take a step forward. It's written specifically to give prudence or guidance and direction to people who are very simple. It's written also for youth. And so actually, let's just do this. I know sometimes youth are like, don't ever single me out, right? But if you're a youth, can we just get fist in the air for the youth here? Because I love you all. I'm glad you're here. I'm so glad that you all are here. I love that you guys get together and do youth group and stuff like that. I hate that we didn't get to do summer camp this year. Can I get a boo for that? Seriously. I hate that we didn't get to do youth camp this year. And I hate that Josh Anderson never invites me to come and speak at youth ministry. No, he does actually, and sometimes I'm just an idiot and I don't make it. But I hope to come and hang out with you guys soon. I love you all. And listen to me though, if you're one of the youth, if you're a youngish person, the book of Proverbs is written for you. In fact, it says it right there on page 1 in verse 4. It's written to give knowledge and discretion. Now, these are kind of weird words that we don't use all of the time, discretion, knowledge. But the idea is that this is written so that youth can take a step forward, so that youth can grow in being more insightful as a human being, wiser as a person, better at navigating the complicated twists and turns of life. The book of Proverbs is written for you if you're a young person. Well, on the other hand, some of us here might kind of be saying, I'm not a youth, and I don't think I'm simple. I think I've made a decision many years ago to devote my life to following the Lord and serving Him, and I've loved His Word, and I've read the book of Proverbs 1,000 times by now. Boring. Why are we doing this? Well, guess what? If you would count yourself already among the wise, the book of Proverbs is for you as well, right? Look with me, if you would, at just a moment. My page just turned in the wind. I think it's verse 5. Let the wise hear. So if you're in that category of people who say, I've read the book of Proverbs 1,000 times, and I've been seeking to apply its wisdom to my life every single day, let the wise hear and increase. You see, the book of Proverbs is an invitation to each and every one of us to take a step forward with the Lord beginning today. And so let me just pause on that for one moment and just kind of ask a question. Whether you're kind of more in that place where you'd say, I don't like being called a simpleton by Proverbs chapter 1, and I apologize, I'm just telling you what's here, right? You don't like being called a simpleton, but you'd say kind of honestly, yeah, I'm kind of undecided about this spiritual stuff. Sometimes I'm cool with it, and sometimes I'm just doing other things with my life. Whether you're kind of in that undecided place, whether you're a young person just absorbing God's wisdom, maybe for the first time in your life, or just learning your way along, or whether you are among the wise who have been reading this for decades now and seeking diligently to apply it in your life, or anywhere in between, let me just ask you this question. Is it possible that you've reached a place of being comfortable in just a plateau of spirituality right now? Just a plateau in where you are, and maybe there's been some seasons before where there's been some spiritual hunger or some spiritual thirstiness, and you were going after it, and you were digging into it, and you were really interested, and you were having discussions with others. Maybe you were seeking the Lord genuinely from your heart, but today you're just kind of a little bit more on coast mode, just kind of a little bit more cruising along, just kind of a little bit more staying where you've been for a while. I wonder, actually, in this weird year that we're living in, this year of 2020, with all of the challenges that it has brought for so many of us, financial challenges, relational challenges, face mask challenges, anxieties, fears, griefs, loneliness, distance, out of my normal routine. I wonder if some of us in this difficult and challenging year have found ourselves just kind of in one spot spiritually for a while. And the book of Proverbs is here inviting you. In fact, let me say this more clearly and more strongly. Through his word, the Holy Spirit himself today is inviting you to take a step forward with the Lord. To take a step further in your own spiritual journey, to take a step beyond the comfortable plateau that you've been camping out at for too long. God's Spirit, through his word today, is inviting you to take a step forward in your spiritual journey. And more specifically than that, God, through his word, is inviting you to take a step forward down the way of wisdom. So, who is this book for? It's for us. It's for each and every one of us. And it's an invitation to take a step further with the Lord. I could say a little bit about this book being written by Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. The name Solomon means peace. King's son, whose name is peace, the prince of peace, right? Son of David, king of Israel, wisest man who ever lived, according to the book of 1 Kings in his generation. Wisest man in the world. And we're invited to learn the kind of wisdom that he received, the kind of wisdom that he encountered from the Lord. Except there's something even sweeter, as I mentioned to you, that this is for us. Let's not forget, as we talk about this Prince of Peace, whose words offer us wisdom, let's not forget that about 1,000 years after King Solomon was holding his wisdom conferences and people from all the nations were coming to hear his observations and his advice and his direction for life that he had received from the Lord, along came this other fellow named Jesus. And it was said of him that one greater than Solomon is here. And let's not forget that this one greater than Solomon, he loved us and gave himself for us. And now, for all who believe in him, he's alive in us. And therefore, if we're connected with the vine named Jesus Christ, part of what we're receiving is this stuff right here, through IV kind of intensity. Straight into our veins and straight into our lifestyle. I wasn't going to say that. I added that in. I just added like a minute to the message. Sorry, we're going to have to make that up somewhere. All right, but let's keep on cruising. We'll talk more about Solomon's connection with Jesus later on. Okay, the first thing we need to catch here is that this is for us. Okay, the second thing we need to catch is that this kind of wisdom that we learn about here in the book of Proverbs is practical. This wisdom is for us, and this wisdom is very, very practical. The nature of wisdom itself, and so like that very first word that we see there in verse 2, to know wisdom, the nature of that word is the idea of a skill, a craftsman's skill, if you will, right? And so actually in the Hebrew language, there was this same word, chokmah, is used for the craftsman's skill of arts and painting. It's used for the craftsman's skill in woodworking. It's used for the craftsman's skill of navigating a ship through tough waters. And then this idea of chokmah that the book of Proverbs talks about is picked up here as a craftsman's skill that is given to God's people, not necessarily for woodworking. I'm not that crafty with wood. Some of you are really skillful at that and awesome. I'm not that handy with navigating boats. In fact, I don't think I've ever done it in my life. But God's word offers us a kind of skill for navigating life well in this world that God has made. It's a skill for navigating life in God's world. It's a skill for living well in the real world that we live in right now. And this kind of wisdom, this kind of skill for navigating life is tremendously practical. Just think for a moment about some of the things that come up as repeated themes in the book of Proverbs. Things like the words that we use. That turns out to be a really concrete, practical detail of life, right? The words that we use or the words that we wisely don't use, that's a pretty practical thing that's going to affect us on a day-to-day level if we gain this kind of practical wisdom. Things like wisdom for marriage, things like wisdom for parenting, things like wisdom for fair dealings in the work world, things like wisdom for all kinds of details of our lives, from our words to our relationships to the way that we walk with the Lord, down into the nitty-gritty details of life, this stuff that we call wisdom, it gives us skill for navigating the tricky questions that we run into all over. And here's the thing, God already had delivered his law by the time the book of Proverbs was written. God's people already had the law. And the prophets of God were already preaching the huge themes of God's redeeming grace and the huge themes of God's redeeming work in history. And yet God, in his mercy and in his love, looked at his people and said, I know you have the law, and I know you have the words of the prophets speaking the great themes of redemption. But you also need skills for the nitty-gritty stuff of life, for the nitty-gritty stuff of work and relationships and the words that you use. And so the book of Proverbs gives us this kind of practical, daily, real-world kind of instruction that you and I need. That's all I'm going to say about that. That's the second thing we need to catch about the wisdom that we learn in this book. It's a very practical kind of thing. It gives us skills for navigating life in God's world. And that's something that I need. It's something that I want. I hope it's something that you want and something that you realize you need as well. But here's a next thing that we realize. It's not just that this wisdom is practical, it's also that this wisdom is ethical, if you will. This wisdom not only makes you a skillful and successful person at life, it makes you a good and righteous person in life. You see, there's something that's kind of, you might almost call it a dark side of wisdom. In a way, Satan is crafty. He's shrewd. He's able to accomplish the ends that he aims for very often, right? There's a dark side of wisdom, and actually, one of the words that's used here in verse 3 can sometimes be used for that kind of dark side of wisdom. Verse 3 speaks of receiving instruction in wise dealings. You can receive instruction in craftiness, instruction in shrewdness, instruction in how to get to your goals, whatever those goals are. You know, you think, I've got kind of echoing in my head, you know, Old Testament professor using the example years ago of somebody who's really skillful at avoiding paying taxes, right? There's a kind of skill in that. You might even call it a kind of wisdom. There's an art, there's a skill to it. There's something crafty and shrewd about being able to avoid paying taxes, but if you're doing it with underhanded methods, it's not good. It's not righteous. It's not what God intends for his people as representatives of him, right? And so the book of Proverbs not only teaches us skills for navigating life, and not only gives us practical stuff, it also gives us ethical stuff. And so look at the end of verse 3, to receive instruction in wise dealing, but also notice this, in righteousness, right relationships with God, right relationships with other people around you, right relationships of peace within your own life, instruction in righteousness and justice. We think of justice usually only as a negative thing, just punishing people who need punishment. The Bible's idea of justice is so much richer than that. It's a restoring impulse in God's own heart to bring things that are out of alignment or out of shalom into a place of peace and shalom. You want to be the kind of person who is living with a righteous kind of integrity in your own life and living as a representative of a restoring kind of justice with other people around you, a kind of person who is living not just with a crafty shrewdness to get to whatever your goals may be, but a kind of crafty shrewdness that will lead to equity. The kind of wisdom that we hear about here in the book of Proverbs is for us, it's practical, and it's also ethical. It makes us not only skilled people, but good people by God's grace. This is what the book of Proverbs is teaching us about. But here's the most important thing that Proverbs, in its introduction, invites us into. It's not just that this is for us and that it's practical and ethical, but even more importantly than any of that, we need to realize that this kind of wisdom is deeply theological. In other words, it's not just about doing things well based on the way things always work. No, notice where this kind of wisdom begins. Verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. What's the beginning of wisdom? The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. In other words, the fear of the Lord is essential to true wisdom in the same kind of way that counting is essential to mathematics. And so some of you right now, if we just do, what's 4 times 4, real quick? 16, all right? Some of you got that answer without even needing to use your fingers and toes, right? Because we understand some of the axioms of mathematics. We've learned some of the principles so much that we've memorized them and we can spout them off without going all the way back to the source of counting things and understanding how that works in that regard. The fear of the Lord is essential to wisdom in the same way that counting is essential to mathematics. There's a lot of wisdom in this book that won't explicitly name the Lord by name. There's a lot of verses here that will just pay attention to ants and the way the ants crawl on the ground. What does that have to do with the Lord? Well, just as 4 times 4 always equals 16 because there's a rhythm, a logic, a counting that happens underneath it, even if you've memorized it apart from counting it all up. So the ants do what the ants do. And wise people imitate ants in certain ways at a fundamental and essential level because of the fear of the Lord himself, right? And so that doesn't mean when we say that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, it doesn't mean that people who don't know God don't have any wisdom at all. In fact, there are passages in the book of Proverbs that appear to be kind of carbon copies of wisdom from Egypt. There's stuff in here that you could learn by just observing animals or observing people over time. But at the essence of all of it, at the center of it, at the core, this wisdom is intentionally and inescapably theological. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. In fact, it's essential, not only, we know that, not only because it's here with pride of place at the beginning of the book of Proverbs, but actually if we go to, remember I told you there's kind of a structure in Proverbs, chapters 1 through 9. At the end of that beginning section from chapters 1 through 9, we hear this from Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Sound familiar? It's as if the book of Proverbs is trying to show us by bookending that first section, this is the essence of everything we're talking about. And then we get to the end of the book of Proverbs, and in the second to last verse of the whole book of Proverbs there, at the end of Proverbs chapter 31, as we learn about the woman who is the supermodel of wisdom, if you will, there in chapter 31, the second to last verse there says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who what? Fears the Lord is to be praised. You see, the book of Proverbs is putting this idea in bold, italics, underlined, highlighted for us to say if there's only one thing that's at the core of all of the wisdom that there is to be offered, if there's one thing at the core of you taking a step forward with the Lord today, here's what's at the core of it. It's this idea of fearing God and fearing the covenant Lord of Israel. Now that brings up a question. Because if we're honest and we're not just giving Sunday school answers to each other, there's probably something inside most of us that says, do I really want to fear God? Because like our culture tells us that fear is bad. And our personal experience tells us 100% of the time, apart from fearing the Lord, 100% of the time, fears are negative. And maybe not 100% of the time. There's like that fear of like, don't run in the street when the car is coming. That's helpful, right? But is God just the oncoming car who's going to run us over and that's all there is to it? Do I really want to fear God? We got to slow down a little bit and think about this. And we need to understand a few things in order to understand why we would even want to accept this invitation to lean into moving forward with the Lord based on fearing Him. The first thing that we need to catch is that this is a different kind of fear. It's a kind of fear that drives out all other fears. How do I know that? Before the Bible tells me so. Exodus chapter 20, verse 20, God commands His people, do not fear. The very next sentence after saying, do not fear, fear the Lord who redeemed you out of Egypt. What's going on there? Do not fear, fear the Lord. This is a different kind of fear. It's not a kind of fear that enslaves you. It's a kind of fear that liberates you. Do you see? It's a fear that drives out other fears. And it's a fear that doesn't drive us into hate. We mentioned this a couple weeks ago, right? Yoda taught us so well. Fear leads to hate. Hate leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. And hate leads to the dark side. And the dark side leads to suffering. Like Yoda taught us so well. Fear leads to all kinds of negative stuff, right? But this is not a kind of fear that just leads you into slavery to other fears. It's not a kind of fear that gives you over to a lifestyle of hatred. No, this is a fear that frees you from all other fears and a kind of fear that leads you into a life of truly loving and serving other people. This is a different kind of fear. And a second thing that we need to realize is this different kind of fear, this fear that drives out all other fears, is not just a respect for punishment. Now, it is right for a young child to learn to respect his or her parents for fear of consequences. It's right for a young child to learn that. And so sometimes we just say, well, that's all God is asking of us. He's treating us like two-year-olds. But I want to suggest to you that there's something more profound going on than just fearing punishment. I mean, Ecclesiastes 8:13 does connect the fear of God with fear of punishment. So there should be something in us that says, I don't want to disobey the Lord because there's negative consequences. There's something to that, but there's so much more. So think for a moment about the way that the Psalms talk about fearing God. It's not just fear God because bad stuff might happen to you. I mean, that's Muslim theology, to be honest. It's not just fear God because bad stuff might happen to you if you disobey him. Think for a second about Psalm 96, verse 4. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. Why is he to be feared? Because he's great and awesome. See, this kind of fear that frees us from all other fears is the right response of being in the presence of true greatness. And true goodness, and true beauty. There's a kind of, we might call it a sense of awe and wonder. A motivating sense of awe and wonder that is rightly felt in the presence of the divine, of the holy. This is not just about fearing punishment, though. No, this is about honoring God as God in our lives. A European theologian named John Calvin makes an interesting comment about this issue of the fear of the Lord being awe and not merely dread of punishment. He says at one point, besides, this fear of the Lord restrains one from sinning, not out of dread of punishment alone, but because it loves and reveres God as Father. This kind of fear of the Lord is rooted in loving God as Father. And then he goes on and he says, even if there were no hell, this kind of fear of the Lord would still shudder at offending the Father. This is an intimacy of relationship. It says, even if there were no hell, you're my Father. And you're great, and you're awesome, and you're holy. And so there's something inside of me that says, I don't want to go against your will. I want to live my life in alignment with the way that you've designed things wisely for me and for us here in this world. Maybe an illustration will help with this. Some of the best books that I've ever read to my children are a little series of books called The Wing Feather Saga. Get a few? I'm not going to give away anything because a lot of you haven't read them and some of you should read them with your kids. It's not a should, but you know, whatever. You should. So I'm not going to give away too much, but there's a point in The Wing Feather Saga written by Andrew Peterson when one of the main characters, Janner, and his brother find themselves essentially in the presence of their maker, essentially in the presence of the divine. And yet, the main character, Janner, is not allowed to enter through the doorway when his brother does for certain reasons in the story. And Andrew Peterson describes Janner's response like this. Janner didn't know what to feel. He was embarrassed at his jealousy toward his brother and at the bitterness he had aimed at the Maker over all the years. He was afraid to be so close to such power and mystery. Janner's heart somersaulted with shame, embarrassment, envy, frustration at himself, then contrition and gratitude, but then more frustration. There on the steps, Janner understood something about his own heart. He was deeply, blatantly selfish. Even in his performance of his duties, he thought mainly of his own performance. In his courageous moments, he thought of his courage. Only in his pain and despair did he ever turn his attention to the Maker. And then it was only to demand answers or outcomes. "Be still," a voice said. And then he realized that, of course, the one who had spoken had also made the world. Janner trembled, and now he was crying. He felt in his heart a braid of pain and delight and longing that made his bones burn and his heart quake. All his attention turned from himself, and he yearned for the speaker of those words so desperately that he wished he could die and be born again just to know the pleasure of the Maker's presence. He knew himself as he was known, and now he was still. A great love enveloped him, and he thought of his father's bear-like embrace, only now he knew that his father's arms were only a shadow of the bright love that held him now, the bright love that always had held him, with an inescapable, indescribable tenderness. "Be still," the voice repeated, again and again like a beating heart, until Janner was at last able to obey and to rest. And there in the light of the fire, Janner Wingfeather encountered, no, absorbed, an abiding peace that he would never forget all the days of his life. He was still, and he was loved. So God's word tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of life transformation. The fear of the Lord is at the essential core of all life transformation. The fear of knowing Him is the essence of what it means to live well in His world. That kind of fear that Janner's story describes, that kind of fear that drives out all other fears, that kind of fear which is a holy reverence that doesn't drive us away from God, but a holy reverence that draws us toward Him with humility. That kind of fear of the Lord, that holy reverence, is what wisdom is made of. And therefore, if we want to take a step forward with the Lord today, if we want to take a step forward with the Lord this fall, and not just stay in the plateaus where we've been for a few months, it begins with this heart posture of humility. And it's going to continue to require that heart posture of genuine humility before the greatness of our Maker, who loved us and sent His Son in love to make us His own, to bring us back into His presence, even when we had strayed far off. The essential ingredient to true wisdom is not memorizing lists of principles. The essential ingredient to true wisdom is not simply trying harder next time. The essential ingredient to true wisdom is not just stuffing your head full of theological facts. The essential core of true wisdom is not to say just believe in yourself and you can do anything you put your mind to. No, the essential ingredient in true wisdom is this holy reverence for Him. It's this holy reverence, this holy, humble posture before Him. It's this place of humility before the Lord. C.S. Lewis said it well. He said, "In God you come up against something which is in every respect immeasurably superior to yourself." Let that sink in for a second. In God, you come up against something which is in every respect immeasurably superior to you. Unless you know God as that, and therefore know yourself as virtually nothing in comparison, you do not know God at all, C.S. Lewis says. As long as you're proud, you cannot know God. A proud man is always looking down on things and looking down on people. And of course, as long as you're looking down, you cannot see something that is above you. But in God, we come up against something which is in every respect immeasurably superior to us. And thanks be to God that He sent His Son down to our level, to meet us eye to eye, to give His life to redeem us from our sins and our failures and from our shame, and then to invite us into this journey of living well to the glory of His name, to invite us into this journey of a lifestyle that says, Your kingdom come, Your will be done right here on earth as it is in heaven. That's what wisdom is all about. It begins there with that posture of humility, that relationship with Him. So let me ask you today, as we're kind of embarking on this series together as a church family, are you ready right now just in kind of quiet, the quiet of your own heart, just to humble yourself in His presence and cry out to Him with this posture of heart that says, I want to revere You above everything else. And I want to take a step further in this journey of wisdom. That's what Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 is inviting us to. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and only a fool would reject His invitation to come.